When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Lord Tolhurst, and I'm with Dave and Holly on the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
What's going on today on the What Difference Does It Make podcast?
Today's a great day. I want to say I'm super happy, but I'm wondering if we should be feeling a little darker.
No, that's right. Put on your Eeyore voice.
Oh, Dave. How are you feeling today?
Can't even be sad. It's terrible. I don't believe that you love the band The Cure. It's crazy because you're just always filled with joy. So we're talking today with one Lawrence Tolhurst, right? Isn't that his real name?
Yes, but we're going to call him Lowell because that is how people know him.
Okay, that's probably for the best. Yeah, we should call him, because Larry, not really a goth name.
Larry is the drummer of U2.
Well, that's not...
That is Larry to me, and this is Lowell, and Lowell was the drummer, and then he was the keyboardist in The Cure.
Larry is also, Three Stooges guy. So, not really goth. So, drummer in U2... And Larry from the Three Stooges, not goth. We are talking goth because there is a book out by Lowell Tolhurst. Tell us about this book, Holly.
The book is called Goth, and it is somewhat of a history of goth music, but it's not a straightforward or straight ahead history. It has Cure stories and Lowell's stories of The Cure and playing with other musicians woven in. And he writes a lot about goth bands and his influences. So it's a history and a little bit about The Cure. You get a little bit of everything.
As we're going to learn, this is part of a trilogy. The first book he wrote was a memoir on The Cure called Cured. And now we have the second.
Lowell did not only write about the other artists, the musicians that influenced him, but also writers. So you get a full picture of his interpretation of goth.
It starts from Lowell's beginning. So goth starts when Lowell discovers music or books, when he discovers the art world and takes us on this journey. It's a musical journey, as one Larry used to say. So from one Larry to another, this is goth that we're going to learn about. We're also going to learn about social media, Holly.
We are going to learn about social media. Well, you probably already know a lot about social media, but we're going to ask you kindly to visit us on social media on our YouTube channel at What Difference Does It Make Podcast and on our other social media at WDDIM Podcast. We should also probably mention that my audio, it's a noticeable difference. I ended up having to do this on my phone. So we apologize for my lower quality audio this week.
All right. It's not as if you were talking to a member of your favorite band, the whole wide world.
Speaking of goth, this is going to haunt me for the rest of my life because I was really looking forward to this interview. But we got through. We did the best we could. And I was really thrilled to chat with Lowell because his music has had quite an impact on me, as you know.
Rock Hall member. Yeah. So why don't we get into it now? We're talking with Lowell Tolhurst. He wrote a book. It's called Goth. We're going to talk about it on the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Hey. Yes.
Hello.
I am. Hi.
Hi, Lowell. How are you?
I'm all right. I went to Cleveland a few days ago to see the eclipse. So I got back yesterday. So I'm a little jet lagged, but you'll excuse that. Mm-hmm. You
know. It looked like a fun scene at the Rock Hall.
It was great. And they're always great. I've been out there a couple of times to do different things. And this time I got to see Inside the Vault. People normally don't get to see, you know, so I saw Jimi Hendrix's jacket, Bob Dylan's harmonica from the March on Washington, and Elvis Presley's army uniform, which was surprising because he was really, really skinny and small.
We all were at that age, weren't you? You were that.
Well, yes, exactly. At that age, everybody was skinny, you know. Yes, for sure.
It's a good look. Any goth representation at the Rock Hall?
Just me. No, I mean, you know, it was a pretty goth event because the sky turned black and everything disappeared. Yes, I went to check their bookstore, make sure they got my books, which they have, and I signed all the stock. So, you know, that's nice for them. Nice for me, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it was good. But, you know, like I say, you know, then we had to fly back yesterday to LA. So we got back here late and so we're a little discombobulated, but we're all right.
Yeah, because you're rehearsing, I would imagine. You're going on tour now.
Yeah, I'm rehearsing every day. In fact, after this, I will be rehearsing. I first have a meeting about something else to do with my first book. But, yeah, it's very busy. Which is good. You know, I like it. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine the other day who I went to high school with. So, you know, we're the same age. And he's had a career working as a scientist for, you know, ever since he left college and stuff. And he said, you know, I thought I'd be retired, but I'm busier than I've ever been, you know, and it's the same for me. I like it. I'm happy to be busy and doing things, you know.
Yeah, but you've branched out with the writing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I always wanted to do that. And a few years ago, a friend of mine called me up from New York, kind of called my bluff. He said, you know, you still thinking of writing a book? And I went, yeah, yeah. He said, okay, because a good friend of mine is coming to Los Angeles to start up the West Coast office of this big publishing company. So you should meet him. So I went, oh, okay, fine. You know, and that was like 10 years ago. And Ben Schaefer is still my editor today. So, you know, it was a good thing to do. And it's some ways it's very similar to making music. It's a slower process, but the discovery and the creation is the thing that I've always liked about everything, you know, and so music, lyrics, and then to writing a book, and then writing two books, and now I'm starting my third. So it's a lifelong obsession, you know, really, to become an author. And so finally, I, you know, in my third act, I get to do that part.
Did you initially want to do a memoir about The Cure? And it just, is it like a through line? This led to goth, that's leading to what's your, the trill, is this going to be a trilogy or what are we looking at?
Yes, it's a trilogy. And you know, here's the thing. And this is going to sound a little disingenuous, but it's not meant to be. When I wrote Cured, you know, it was kind of easier in lots of ways because, well, you have to remember stuff, but you also, it's what you remember. So I put that out. And then the quotes I'm going to have at the front of this next book is from Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And he said, what's important, and I'm paraphrasing it here, what is important in life is not what actually happened, but what you remember and how you remember it, right? And that's absolutely the case because, you know, when I wrote Cured, I couldn't remember conversations verbatim. I mean, I defy anybody to remember, you know, a conversation they had yesterday with their spouse or something, absolutely word for word. You can't. So I would write the conversations. I remembered what they were about, and I know how the people talk that are involved. So I would write it like that. But the first book, you know, I kind of threw everything in. And then at the end of it, I thought, hey, a lot of people write like three memoirs, one after the other. So I'm going to do that, but I'm just going to do it in a different way. So with Goth, the way you should read the title for Goth is not Goth, a history, as in a history of Goth. It's like Goth, the person, you know, a history of the person that is a Goth, you know. So that's really how I mean it.
I think both Dave and I thought it was the history of goth. So we were pleasantly surprised to read your memories woven in and what the artists that you talked about meant to you and how they influenced you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the whole thing, because when I wrote Cured, I went on tour. I talked to my agent. I said, how many events do people normally do for books? And he said, oh, 8 or 9, maybe. And I did about 300 for Cured because I did it the same way. I went everywhere. I went North America, South America, Canada, Europe, France, England. I went everywhere. And I did it the way that we did it when we started The Cure, which was to go and play to everybody. And, you know, we were here for 6 months at a time, just touring, playing everywhere. And it works. So I did that. But one of the things that was really useful for me was I would turn up at bookstores and talk for a bit and then take some questions and then sign lots of stuff. You know, good thing about a book tour is I only need one person with me, like, you know, my assistant, Margie, and, you know, you get to go for dinner at 8:30 because everything's done by that time. You know, it's not 2 a.m. by the time you get out. But, you know, seriously, the thing that was really good was I got to talk to a lot of people about what their experiences were with the music and how it affected their lives or whatever. And what they mostly wanted to know about was how it came about and how things happened, you know, how it evolved. Because to me, living through it, it's something I talk about with my friends. You know, the last time I met Robert, he came out here to play with The Cure in at the Hollywood Bowl a few months ago. And when I talk to him and Simon Gallup, you know, we talk about family and people we know. Talk about music, and we don't talk about business. We talk about the people we know because we all grew up together. So therefore, that's the important thing. And so the stuff that's in Cured and the stuff that's in Goth is my life, but it's stuff that, like, you know, if you wrote down all your life, some things you take for granted and you think, oh, well, yes, I guess other people would find that interesting or different, you know. So that's what I wanted to put out. And then fast forward to the day of the eclipse that we just had, right? Nobody knew I was going to be there. I called up Greg Harris, the president of the Rock Hall, and said, hey, I'm going to be in town. Can I come and help with anything? Is there anything, you know, you'd like to come and help? Plus, you know, my friends that were with me were like, hey, well, yeah, we'd like to go and see the Rock Hall. So I'm like, oh, okay, sure. So I called him up and he said, yeah, come and introduce it. It's where we start it all. And I said, okay. So I went to do that. So nobody knew I was going to be there. But when the eclipse finished, there was hundreds of people lined up to talk to me and get things signed and stuff that didn't even know I was going to be there. And it was overwhelming because most of them said, hey, the thing that meant stuff to me in the books and the music was when I was younger and things were, you know, some things were not good, this helped. And then when things were good, it helped even more. So that to me is the purpose of any art, of anything, is to help us as humans go through things. Because I've traveled all over the world the last 40 years, and the thing that joins us all together, the thing that's the same everywhere on the planet, is music. It doesn't matter. There's some variations, but it's like that's what connects us. And it was funny, those kind of big communal events. And I think people felt that at the eclipse, you know, because there's about 1,000 people standing out in front of the Rock Hall. And as the light went away, it was like, do you ever remember that movie 2001, right? Where all the apes start banging bones on the ground, yeah, and stuff. It was like that. It was very primary, you know, it's like very, very ancient, whatever was coming out, you know. It was a good reminder. So I'm a great believer in witnessing those different events and different things that happen in your life and actually ascribing some kind of purpose, mystical or otherwise, which will give you a clue. That's really what I'm interested in as I'm getting older, because I start to see all the connections going on back for 45 years and how it still works today and things work today. And I'm humbled and flattered. It blows my mind most of the time that I was able to do those things. And now to catalogue them is obviously my role. You know, that's what I have to do.
It's probably good that when you're having the experience yourself that, yeah, you weren't aware of the greater impact it was having on people, because then your perception, you might behave differently.
Yeah, it's your life. Don't ascribe greatness to things being at 17. You're just trying to understand stuff. And one of the things that was amazing to me was a few years ago when they had Google Earth came out and everybody was looking at where they grew up on the world, you know, the streets and that. I did that. And I went back to where I grew up with Robert and Michael and Pearl and Simon. And I looked around the streets and I wrote to Robert straight away. And I said, to me, looking at it, it is no surprise that we wrote the sort of music that we did, because it's there. It's right there in the you know, the dark, dank English countryside. It's there. I never thought about at the time that we were going to be this huge thing that carried on throughout my whole life, you know, never.
We are talking with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member, Lowell Tolhurst. We're going to take a break and return shortly.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
And we're back on the What Difference Does It Make podcast with our guest, Lowell Tolhurst.
One of the great things in the book was you followed the fans. Like, there was, I don't know if you were a Blitz kid at all, but there was also the Batcave was going on in the 80s. I don't know if you were. And so what was the research like for that? Because I mean, that was after you were like had taken off and you were on.
Yes, no, because the Batcave I went to and I used to go to with the Banshees and I knew the people that run it and stuff. Blitz. No, I wasn't really a Blitz kid, but there's very few places in London you can have a club. So they just changed them around, different names, you know, different days of the week. It was the same place still. So it was pretty much 90% of the same people, just got different clothes on. Yeah, for the research part, you know, research I generally hate. It's like doing homework. You know, I don't want to do it. I want to do the stories and join the emotions and make some conclusions from it. For this book, I had somebody, a friend of mine who was an author who'd made a brilliant book about David Bowie, and I asked him if he would like to do the research for me about a lot of things that I wasn't going to, and he went, yeah. But after about a month of working together, he got sick and he couldn't do it. So my son has a master's of fine arts in creative writing. So I called him up and I said, okay, now's the time to pay the old man back all the money he spent sending you to college. And would you like to do the research for this? And he's got a very good mind for that because he also did thing in anthropology. So he's very good at that. And it was a good way to bond as father and son, because, you know, like a lot of father and sons, you know, they shoot hoops or they go play a round of golf or something. We worked on a book together, you know, and it was really a good thing to do.
Had you ever played music together?
Yeah, but that's not good. That's not good. In fact, my son just wrote an article for a magazine in San Francisco about that very thing, you know, and he's correct. You know, we had tried, like we often go on little trips together, you know, because, well, long story short, I didn't really have any kind of relationship with my father. So I made sure that when my son was growing up, I was going to have a relationship. So we went on this trip a few years ago to this place way up in Northern California, and we rented this house, and every day we would go for long hikes, you know, out and stuff. And then they had a nice jacuzzi, which I like. And then in the evening, you know, I told him, bring some of your instruments and stuff. And it was okay, but we were both so stepping around each other so cautiously, you know, that in actual fact, it was probably, we decided in the end, we'd just go hiking, be much better. But the book was better because it was very specific tasks, you know, like for him, I'd say, okay, I'm going to give you two or three names and I just want the research on that so I can incorporate it. Then the other thing I did that saved us both as well was I said, okay, you know, you got the job. I said, do a couple of thousand words on this subject. And I gave it to my agent. How about this guy? And I didn't tell him who it was. And he read it. He went, yeah, no, he's good. I said, yeah, okay, so it's my son. We'll hire him, right? And he went, yeah. So we hired him. But then I I could turn to Gray and say, I'm going to ask you for what I need. I said, but I'm not your boss. So no, this guy is your boss, right? So that, you know, I didn't get the call on a Friday at 6 p.m. like, oh, Dad, I don't really want to do this. Can I just put it in next week? And so, and like, no, no, because I'm not the boss right here. But we had a great time from it because we have a lot of the same touchstones. And I was able to see it, especially for like writing the stuff later with the newer goth bands and stuff, which I know of, but I don't know about so much. He's able to tell me, okay, well, look, this is this, and this is what happened here. And I'm like, okay. So it makes a lot more sense to put all those things together. It's really, was a good thing for us to do. I was just laughing because he started his article off when he got married last year, and I was up in San Francisco because that's where he lives. I said, oh, we should go and get you some, you know, different stuff, clothes for your wedding. And off we went. We went to this store, very she store somewhere, you know, get a nice shirt or two. And the assistant was talking to her other thing. And one of my songs came on from the past, you know. And she said, oh, I really like this song. Do you know this band through her friend? And she went, yeah. I said, do you think they go on tour anymore? She said, oh, I don't know. They're hella old now. My wife overheard that and she was laughing, you know, killing herself. But, you know, it's a different generation. But the thing that was really apparent to me this last few days going to Cleveland was like the range of people that have been affected by all the stuff. You know, there are people like my age in their 60s, and there's people, they're 16-year-olds, you know, and they don't all come up to me and say, oh, sign this, you know, my dad loves you or something. You know, they some of them, they like it too. So it's been a long, strange trip, as they say.
Did you introduce him to books like that you mentioned, like The Bell Jar or Nausea, The Stranger? Are these books that you felt maybe would connect with him somehow? Or why did you gravitate to those books initially?
A lot of those things were my way out when I was like, you know, the summer I was 14, my mother was a Catholic convert, so there was no Catholic schools in my town. So I went to the next town to go to school. So consequently, at 14, summer vacations were very lonely because I didn't know anybody in my hometown because I didn't go to school with them. I went to school with a bunch of other people and I was too young to like, I'll just get on the bus and go over there. I couldn't. So the summer I was 14, I go to the library, and the library had this system where you get one ticket and you can take out three items at a time, but somehow I'd been able to get three tickets so I could take out nine things at a time. So I had like whole bunch of books, and then they also used to lend out records. That summer, I just listened to everything. I didn't care what it was. Next record, next record, next record. Listened to everything and read a whole lot of stuff. And those things that I found in there are what I gave to my son later on. And then when it came, I suppose he was a teenager, and he showed me the list of books, you know, he had to read for school or whatever. And I said, oh, Fahrenheit 451. Well, you know, Ray Bradbury lives here and he's going to do a talk at the library like next week. So let's go. Because I said, because then you can say to the teacher, hey, not only have I read the book, I've met the guy who wrote the book. And it was great, you know, and Ray Bradbury was great. He was pretty old then, you know, and I think he was wheelchair bound. But we stayed afterwards and the place was packed. I stayed afterwards to talk, to people, and we talked to him, and he was completely focused on the next generation, who's coming up to talk. No, he really wanted to talk to myself. He didn't want to talk to me that much, you know, like talk to Gray about stuff. And it made an impression on him. I think those kind of things, hopefully I've been able to bring them to life for him. And he said that to me. He said, how dinner time conversation was about Can or Camus or something, you know, different things. He said, and I was 10 years old and I didn't really realize what a gift I was being given with those things. But I just thought, well, what would I have liked to have known back then? And hopefully, okay, but you never know how much you give across. But he's pretty good and we have a good father-son relationship, I think. It's good.
You're fortunate. We talk about that a lot, about how you can't force something on them. It just kind of peeps into their psyche.
Well, very absolutely true. You can't pour it on and you can't make them become things. Because I was very acutely aware, having had a musical career, that I have met different people who've had fathers who were in bands and stuff, and doesn't always end out great. So when he was younger, I would put instruments in front of him, but I wasn't going to tell him, oh yeah, you have to do this, you have to do that, and he gravitated towards guitar. So I'm like, okay, that's what he wants to play. But you know, I don't play guitar. I said, I've played with a lot of really good guitarists, so even though I can't tell you what to do, I said, I can tell you when you're doing it wrong, you know.
It's important too.
can't tell you how to fix it, but I can tell you that that's wrong, you've got to play it somewhere different. But you know, it's a joke really. But we've sort of gone along parallel paths without me stepping in the way too much, because I never wanted to do that. It's funny, I'm just about to step out on tour with Budgie for the first time, and my son is going on tour with his band to Europe for a month. Whether we liked it or not, it became the family business, you know. So,
and it really did, because you played in a band with your wife, or you made music with your wife.
Oh, yeah. No, we still will, you know, at certain points. The last few years have been kind of busy with some other stuff, but we have lots of time. Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely family business. And her mother was Filipino, and I discovered something about Filipinos very early on, that they all love to sing. Everybody sings, and they all love Christmas. And they explained a lot to me, you know. When I left the Cure and I came back to start writing some more music again, and I was thinking to myself, well, I can sing, but I'm not that great at it, so maybe I'll find somebody to sing. And I was walking around the house, and it was like the obvious thing, you know. Without I was thinking, oh well, yes, Cindy sings all the time around the house. And in fact, when we drive somewhere, which, you know, of course you have to if you live in California, there's lots of long journeys and drives, we sing in the car. We sing all kinds of things, you know. I don't think I'm going to put an album of that out anytime soon, but you know, we sing all kinds of things. Yeah,
the Tolhurst sing show tunes, is that what you're saying?
Right, it could be a bit like that. I think it'd be a bit too shocking for people, actually. I think so. I don't think we'll do it, but yeah.
You also touched on with your drumming that there's a goth style of with your drumming. Yeah. How did you fall upon, like, okay, this is the right sound that I need to bring out the Cure sound, lyrically speaking? Or was there a thought about that process?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it goes back to the things that influenced. It's funny, you know, if you're a drummer, I have a couple of protégés right now, actually, who I'm teaching and stuff. You know, just friends' children and stuff. Actually, one is a friend's wife. Anyway, but, you know, I tell them this thing, partly in jest, but it's kind of true. I say, you know, the two rules of drumming, right? I say, number one, there's no good band without a good drummer, right? It doesn't happen, right? So you've got to be, if you're a good drummer, then you can join a good band. And also, all drummers are friends, which is kind of true, because they're like, we're like goalkeepers in a way. But it's funny, because we're not going to be like that with me and Budgie. We're going to be at the front of everything. So it's going to be different. But a few years ago, I was at this big festival, and there was like 20 bands, and the top five bands that were playing at night, I was thinking to myself, I know all these bands. And the reason I know all these bands is because I know every one of the drummers personally. So it's funny. It's like the Freemasons or something, you know. We have a very similar way of looking at things, and a same sort of path through stuff. So I still keep up friendships with a lot of people like that. And I don't know, as in terms of what makes it, we have similar touchstones. I mean, I think, you know, I talked to Kevin Haskins from Bauhaus, and he's a good friend of mine. He's saying, back when we started playing, we listened to like a lot of the rock stuff, but we also listened to things, you know, like the German bands like Can and stuff. And Jackie Leibitz in Can's great influence for me, because he was very minimal but very precise, you know. And I like that, because to me, the purpose of drums, and you know, if you remember what James Brown said, he said all music is drums, right? And he was right, because at the day, it's the first instrument and it would probably be the last. You know, if you listen to a song, the two things that grab you first of all are the emotion from the voice, if there's a voice, and the rhythm, you know, and everything else is nice and it's there, but it's kind of peripheral on the do. So say for something like The Cure's Pornography, I wanted the drums to be so gigantic that they're just going to come smashing in all the time and grab your attention, whether you want it or not. And that's really the sound that I was after. In fact, a few years ago, I had a custom-built kit made, and the man who made the kit for me said, well, how do you want it? You know, what do you want it to be like? And I said, right, here's this album, and I gave him Pornography. I said, well, I want it to sound like that. Yeah, obviously, that's a lot of stuff in the studio as well, but he managed to do it. It was pretty interesting the way he did it. I mean, a lot of the stuff for goth and all of the darker music came not just from music. It came from literature. It came from cinema. It came from a lot of different areas, you know. So that's really the influenced parts of it.
You're in Los Angeles now. I read somewhere you live in Santa Monica.
You know, I had been coming here since 1980, right? So I kind of had an idea of what's here. My first wife was from California too. So, you know, even I didn't live here that much at that point. I had an idea of the place. And I also did the thing that every English person does when they first come to Los Angeles. The only place that they've ever heard of is Hollywood. So they all move to Hollywood. And then very shortly, after about 6 months, realize it's a terrible place to live and leave, right? So I had left, and moving over here was kind of natural because, like, Santa Monica, in some ways, you know, like with the pier reminds every English person of Brighton, you know. So it's very much like that, with a much nicer beach. And if I moved back to England ever, I would live in Brighton. I wouldn't live in London, but I'm not moving back. I've lived out here the longest period in my whole life. And here's the thing. It's not so much the place, although I really like where I live. It's also the people. And by the time I came here, I wanted to be a stranger in a strange land, even though I wasn't really a stranger that much. But I wanted to have a different experience because I didn't want to stay in England with all the experiences that I had there because I felt it would just drag me down. And when I got out here, I very quickly found people that I could relate to, other musicians, other artists, and I got a lot of love and I got a lot of understanding. And so that stuck with me. So to me, it's going to sound funny, but the place of my redemption is the City of Angels. That's where I have refound myself. I've been able to escape the parts of my past that weren't good for me and have a new life. And so I'm very grateful to this place. So it's very much home, you know, very much home. You know, I'm an American citizen and everything else. So, you know, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, we're happy to have you.
Yeah. Thank you. I guess as long as we're talking about LA, you're playing at the Cruel World Fest, and you have you have so many different vocalists.
Yes.
How are you going to present this show? I would love if you brought along, if we saw the Edge and Bobby Gillespie and all, you know, all these people. What can we expect out of these shows?
I would love to know myself, actually. Some of those people, and I'm going to be a bit mysterious now because one has to be, some of those people will actually be there, but I'm not going to tell you which ones, but some of them are there. And then we have some plans for the ones that wouldn't be there, but I don't know if that's going to work, and that's going to sound very obtuse, but we have got some of the people. So what we've done is, for the Cruel World Festival, that's the most extravaganza, if you like, of the whole thing, because then we're going on tour afterwards, and we'll make it a sort of smaller presentation, but you know, because it's smaller places we'll be in. Yeah, for Cruel World, I spent the last 3 months just preparing different things for it all and stuff. So hopefully it'll be good and people will like it. I mean, for me, it's the first time I've done a major show since in this city since 2011 with The Cure, with Reflections, and played the Pantages, and it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Last couple of years I've been to the Cruel World Festival and enjoyed it, you know. So we actually started talking about this 2 years ago to the people who run it and stuff. So, and then decided, okay, well, the album's out now, we should do it.
And you're only giving yourself one warm-up show. There's one in San Diego and then it's the big time.
That's it, yeah. And to be honest, I think if we're not ready by the warm-up show, we're never going to be ready. But you know, it's I talk especially about my musical partner, Budgie. To me, Budgie, he's the premier percussionist of my generation. To me, you know, this guy is amazing. But we're also very good friends, and we've had a lot of very similar things. So it's nice at this age to find somebody who knows exactly where you've been. We have the same touchstones, you know. So to me, playing with him, and I've done a lot of rehearsal with him out here and stuff like that, it's very natural and it feels very wonderful. So I hope we can transmit that to the audience.
Okay, as long as we're talking vocalists, can you just tell me what makes Robert Smith such an amazing vocalist? Why are we still gravitating towards that voice? What is it about him?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think he would be the first person to say about himself, you know, he's more of a vocalist. He has a style as opposed to being a singer who could sing lots of different things. The only thing he sings is going to sound like him. And that's fine. That's true. A lot of singers. I think you know, he told me a while ago that the thing he enjoyed most is doesn't enjoy so much, you know, playing guitar, but he enjoys singing, you know. So the guitar is, you know, a means to an end, a way to write a song, but he enjoys the singing part of it. If I think back to when we were kids, his father enjoyed singing too. His father was always the loudest voice in church. Right, I remember that. I think it's a family inherited thing. What he always put in his voice was the true expression, the things that you have discovered in your life, rather than some kind of facsimile of it. What you see when you see it is him, for sure.
I'm not sure I can even put a finger on it. It's just that's what music does. It evokes just something and it's different for everybody.
Well, yeah. And my other partner, Jackknife Lee, he says, the job of the musician is discovery, right? And he's right. So you try things out until you discover something that's really you. And then that's what you use.
Will he be on stage with you and Budgie?
Maybe. Maybe. No, he's like, yeah, he gets all over the bloody place doing all kinds of things. So, yeah. No, the invitation's extended to him, but we're not quite sure yet.
Very obtuse. This was wonderful. A big thrill for us. We've been fans forever. So
thank you.
And hopefully you'll come back with your next book release and talk to
absolutely.
Us. Hopefully.
Absolutely, I will. And if I see you on the street, I'll wave.
Cheers.
Thanks, Lowell.
Bye, guys. Bye. Cheers. Thanks. Take care. Bye. Okay, Holly, another Rock Hall member, and not just any Rock Hall member of one of your favorite bands of all time. This is kind of a thrill, wasn't it?
I worked hard to contain myself. I worked hard to contain myself when you arranged this interview and told me about it. I think I contained myself well, but inside I am lit up.
We got through it, Holly. You know,
we did. Even
with a little delay, we had a little delay. Fortunately, Lowell was very patient, so I'd like to thank Lowell for his patience. Anyone else we should thank, Holly?
I think we should thank his publicist at Hush Up Books, Michael Giratano, who is also a total superstar and patient with us.
Indeed, yes. I kept bothering him about it, and he kept me in mind, so I really, really, really appreciate that. I think he understands how important it was for us to get him on this podcast. So thank you so much, Michael.
And I thank you for working so hard to get this one, Dave.
All right. Well, you are welcome. We should also thank Pantheon Podcast because we are a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast family. And we can, you can see other things. I mean, if we wanted to see what Lowell looks like when he talks with us? Where would one find that?
Oh, you will absolutely find him this week on our social media at What Difference Does It Make Podcast on YouTube and WDDIM Podcast on our other social media. Please check it out all week.
Subscribe to our newsletter. Check out our website, WDDIMpodcast.com. That stands for What Difference Does It Make Podcast.com. So you can sign up for your newsletter. You can see all our podcasts that we've done in the past. The newsletter lets you in on what we did the past month and, you know, fun tidbits. So it's kind of a cool thing. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. We appreciate you joining us. Hopefully you will stay with us because we have new episodes every Friday. So subscribe, click on that subscribe button and, you know, so you don't miss a thing. So let's wrap this up. Until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.